This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
I just want to say right now that I am too quiet in my own ears. I'm too quiet. I don't know what's going wrong with the board, but something's...
I can hear you in my ears.
I can hear... I can hear myself, obviously, clearly.
Yeah, but I mean...
But I'm too quiet. I'm a little bit... Oh, that's much better. Oh, yeah.
I can hear you even better now, Nick.
If the listeners...
This is like
home,
one of those ASMR videos.
I don't know what that is.
They're the ones where people listen to, like, people doing, like, washing someone's hair and going, oh, that's nice, and I'm just washing your hair. And they play them in their ears. It's quite an odd thing, isn't it? It's like an odd, a weird new phenomenon.
It's a new phenomenon.
Well, I don't know how new it is. It's probably a few years old now.
Mm. Abort. speaking of abort,
where's this going?
I bought some presents.
Nice. Saved it.
It's Christmas.
Saved it.
I didn't. But what was I saying? I was saying, oh, it doesn't matter. I was just going to say, if you want to know what it was like for me, just then, the listeners at home,
then
turn the volume down, put some headphones in, turn the volume down, and then turn the volume up. Very comforting.
Experience it yourself at home.
To hear yourself in your own ears is kind of one of the greatest comforts in life, I think. Was it not Mark Twain that said, to hear yourself in your own ears is God's greatest comfort? Can we get some reviews up, Natalie, please? What a week we've had. What a bloody week. My name is Nick Helm. This is...
Nathaniel Metcalf.
Every week you pause.
I know, because I always want to go... At that point, I want to go, fan club.
No.
But then I have
this
to
is
remember.
Nick Helm, and this is fan club.
Nathaniel Metcalf.
With Nathaniel Metcalf.
This is Nick Helm, and this is fan club with Nathaniel Metcalf.
This
also
is
Nathaniel
Nick
Metcalf.
Helm's fan club with...
This is Nick. With Nick Helm.
Welcome to Nick Helm's fan club with Nick Helm. And Nathaniel Metcalf. I was just remembering the Patrick Stewart James Corden beef that they had on the...
Oh yeah, what was that? I remember at the time loving it. Wasn't it like...
It's the worst.
It's really awkward, isn't it? And they're both...
It's the worst thing you've ever seen in your life. It was... James Corden was hosting an award. This is years and years ago. It was before James Corden was James Corden. And they both come out of it fairly badly, but Patrick Stewart comes out of it particularly badly. And so James Corden is hosting an award. I mean, I don't really want to get into
no,
it.
No, I do, because I remember enjoying it a lot.
I just speaking of John Kearns every week, me and John Kearns were talking about it like a couple of years ago, and then every so often I'll text him and I'll say, one more, shall I give you one more? So James Corden is hosting I think it's a fashion awards or something like that. And Patrick Stewart goes up to present an award, and he just starts roasting James Corden for like almost no reason.
Isn't it stuff like he's going, oh, you haven't even bothered to tuck your shirt in? Isn't it all stuff like that?
He's going, I could see your belly.
That's right.
From all the way at the back of the room. And James Corden's going, oh, sir, well, pardon me, but I did not realise that I should have tucked my shirt in, but can I just say that when you come on to present an award, you should just get the fuck on with it. Oh, one more. Shall I give him one more? And no one's enjoying it. No one's enjoying it. And then Patrick Stewart goes, I don't know when it was. I think it must have been before James Corden became really big. And I think that he had a reputation for being quite precocious back in the day. To put it mildly. and I think that his reputation... But it also was doing Gavin and Stacey, which was nationally, if not internationally, beloved. And so I think that Patrick Stewart's experience of James Corden as a fellow actor was quite different from the general public's. And he misjudged the way he was going to treat him. And he went on and he went in really hard and started just basically destroying James Corden. And the audience were just like, but we like James Corden. And he completely misjudged it. And then he has these really... So he's like slamming James Corden, but like no one's really reacting. And everyone's going, this is a bit weird. And he just does loads of like fat jokes and stuff like that. And there's one of them and he goes, so James Corden, he goes, I could see your belly from all the way at the back of the room. And James Corden goes, oh, I did not know. And then he goes, one more? Shall I give him one more? if you fancy the Jonas Brothers that much, cover your belly. And it was like, if you fancy the Jonas Brothers that much, cover
Patrick
your belly.
Patrick Stewart is a fun impression to do. It's funny because I don't have that.
Make it so.
I really like Patrick Stewart, but I don't particularly like Star Trek The Next Generation. I think I come from a weird, like...
Boring. It's like he's got none of the personalities of Star Trek. And you just, and that's why I wanted to ask that guy the other week. Do you, you know, is there a Star Trek thing that you don't like?
Yeah,
the Klingon guy. Because, well, you know, circumstances. But but I just thought that, yeah, that's what I'm interested in. Because I've got a friend, I've got a friend of a friend who really likes Star Trek. And I went to see Star Trek Into Darkness. Was that Star Trek 2?
Yeah.
And the thing about Star Trek Into Darkness was they were like going, oh, it's Star Trek 2, but Khan's not in it. Don't worry. Benedict Cumberbatch is in it, but he's not playing Khan. And then he just played Khan. And you go, why have you gone to so much effort to make Chris Pine look like Captain, look like, yeah, William Shatner? And Zachary Quinto to look that much like fucking Leonard Nimoy. And, you know, you've got the main three looking like the main three. You've gone to that much effort. And then you've got Benedict Cumberbatch playing Ricardo Montalban.
Because I get that thing that in the first of the new Star Treks, they go back in time, or Spock goes back in time. They alter time slightly, don't they? So it's like, it's sort of like a remake, but it gets to be like... But things can be a bit different because we've changed time a bit. But it wouldn't be that Khan would be a different race or whatever. It just would be like, no. Now he's English. That wouldn't have happened.
It's really weird and crap the way they did it. And also, they haven't done the adventure yet.
Yeah.
And so do you know what I mean, though? The adventure that Star Trek 2 is based on, they haven't done it yet. Mm. So Khan turns up and goes, I am Khan. And you go, yeah, but you haven't done the episode from the original series yet.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
To make that have any relevance.
Yeah.
So now we've got Benedict Cumberbatch playing Ricardo Montalban from Fantasy Island. And
that seems weird, like, especially now in this era where you'd go, of one of the few big parts where you could have like a Hispanic or Spanish or actor to do it, you've just gone, no, just get an English guy in to do it.
I mean, you go like Ricardo Montalban, you go get Benicio Del Toro. Get Del Toro to do it because he's all
Banderas
over.
He's
all over genre stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And you go, well, he'd almost not. I mean, they don't look anything like each other, but at least it's not so much. But isn't Khan a Sikh as well?
Oh, he might be in the sort of, I don't know, in the story of it.
I think anyway. So it was just it was really weird where you just like, I suspect that he wasn't Khan, and it was a rewrite after he'd been cast. I suspect, because it was so like late in the day, he goes, I am Khan. And it's like, who the fuck, who cares? Nobody in the audience knew that it was Khan, right, who Khan was, because it's just the general public, because the whole point of the Star Trek reboot was to just get general audience members in, not make it like, yeah, Star Trek fans are welcome, I suppose, but really it's an open door policy for, we're making a blockbuster now.
Yeah.
And we're not doing it with the next generation, even though they're all still alive. What we'll do it with is we'll recast Kirk, because that's what everyone relates to Star Trek. So it's kind of like this thing. But, really weird. I think general public didn't know who Khan was. There's no reason for them to. Anyway, so the other thing was that Benedict Cumberbatch's character was called John Harrison, the most evil man in the galaxy. And my best friend from school was called John Harrison. So every time they'd come in and go, John Harrison is going berserk. I'd find that funny on a level that no one else in the
room. I can't remember who pointed this out, but there's a bit at the end of that film where the new Kirk basically radios the original Leonard Nimoy Spock and goes, oh, I've got Khan here. And Leonard Nimoy's like, oh, well, I'll face Khan. And here's how you defeat him. And it's like, so like the sort of plot of this film is they basically phone up another movie and go, they phone up like a better movie and go, hi, yeah, this is, we're doing another movie, but it's like the same as one you've already been in. Which is better than ours. So how did you do it? We want to try and do that movie.
Khan, make it so. Khan. Yes.
I think it's interesting. Like, Patrick Stewart did a series on ITV, I guess, in the late 90s that was called The 11th Hour. And it was about, it was sort of meant to be, it was sort of science fiction, but it was about sort of, he would investigate sort of environmental.
Yeah, but my name's Patrick Stewart.
No.
And today I am investigating the paranormal.
There was
Make It So.
No, it was a drama where he'd play an actor who'd sort of investigate sort of environmental crimes and sort of it'd be all like, what, like, well, so like, it'd be like, oh, there's some sort of crime going on that's involved gene splicing or something.
But
so,
like Pie in the Sky?
No, it'd be like a drama that would be like he would go in and, you know, it'd be a sort of, maybe it was set like 5 years in the future. So it'd be investigating things that haven't quite...
Like bugs?
Yeah, that sort of thing. More like that kind of tone. So it was all like environmental and sort of science-based crimes.
What channel?
ITV. ITV.
ITV.
And there was one...
ITV. My name's Patrick Stewart. And I am on ITV. Oh, gosh. I need to fire my agent.
But it was at the time, it was a bit like, oh, it seems a bit, I thought you'd be a bit beyond this, a bit Star Trek beyond this. And, yeah, thank you. And he was, there's one where, that me and my brother often quote, because it just made us laugh at the time, where it was about like the big sort of climax of the episode was that there was a man who was drinking a glass of water with ice in, but the certain ice that they'd used was a different type of water, which made the ice sink. And it sort of ended, the episode ended with someone about to take a glass of water, and because he noticed that the ice was in the bottom of the cup rather than floating on top, he sort of runs over and smashes the glass out of his hand, and he starts going, put it down, it's heavy water, it's heavy water,
put it down, it's heavy water.
And that just always makes
people
me laugh.
Might not be digging my new vibe now, but maybe the next generation. Make it so.
It's fun, isn't it?
I'm Patrick Stewart.
It's fun being Patrick Stewart.
Ah, heavy water.
Heavy water. It's got heavy water in it.
I'm James Mason.
We've got a star-studded guest on Fan Club this week. We've got them all coming in.
I'm James Mason. Judy.
Who is it?
My word.
It's Cary Grant.
Who's that at the door? I've just realised that the man who shot Liberty Valance,
yeah,
got James Stewart,
yeah,
John Wayne and Lee Marvin in it.
Yeah.
What a cast. I've not seen it. I saw it. I taped it ages ago. Taped? You got tapes? Still using tapes, are you? I taped it
a
while ago.
Using a VHS recorder.
And it was like, fucking hell. The man who shot Liberty
Valance.
You
know what? I don't know that I've ever seen The Man Who
what
Shot Liberty
Valance. It's kind of like one of those films where it sort of like washes over you and then you go...
I think it's got a belter of a theme, though, isn't it? Isn't it a proper, like... I think it's got a good old...
I don't know. Let's get the theme tune
plausible?
For The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, yeah? Let's see. Make It So.
Make It Snow. Christmas.
Make It Snow.
Have they done that? They must have done that, right?
Lieutenant Worf. Make It Snow. I think there is actually like a mashup video of him going, make it snow, make it so.
I think it must be.
Make
yeah.
it so, make it so, make it so.
Yeah.
Like where they've cut it. Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
I like how much we've done about Star Trek Next Generation. Whereas it started by going, don't really like it.
Don't really like it. But I like Patrick Stewart.
I do.
And in the role. yes. There was that show as well, Vicious, with...
with Ian McKellen.
Derek Jacobi.
Oh, is it?
And Ian McKellen.
Oh, and is Patrick Stewart in that?
No. Oh. But those are my other... But Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are best mates.
Yeah, they're
they?
Best mates, aren't
and
they?
And so those are my other impressions.
I think that's really nice when you see them all, like... They're always, like, laughing somewhere, aren't they? They look like they're having
they're
a brilliant time.
They're always wearing bowler hats at Gay Pride and laughing. And you go, oh, that looks nice. There was... Vicious was a show where Derek Jacobi...
I like Derek Blackenby a lot.
And Ian McKellen were both doing like a studio sitcom in front of a live audience. And there was obviously something in their contract where they both had equal... It was like a Towering Inferno arrangement where Steve McQueen and Paul Newman both wanted equal billing or something like that. So the way that they did it was each episode would start with Derek Jacobi on the phone. And so, the beginning of each episode, Derek Jacobi was on the phone to his mother having some sort of domestic. And then after some sort of bit, Ian McKellen would enter at the top of a staircase and he'd have like a one-liner and then he'd have this grand entrance where he walked down the staircase and it would be like Derek Jacobi would be on the going, "Yes, mother! Yes, mother! No, mother! Yes, mother!" And then Ian McKellen would come and go, "What's that? It sound like a gaggle of schoolgirls." And it would get a standing ovation. It would get a standing ovation and then you go, "Is that a joke? Was that a joke?" It's not really a joke.
I love that. And it makes me want to watch it, to be fair. I fancy watching it now.
I watched every single episode. Yeah. I went to see one of the episodes get recorded live, actually. Yeah.
What an experience. You ever seen I, Claudius, Nick?
I've never seen I, Claudius.
Oh, treat yourself. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely incredible.
What's that about?
It's all like the sort of...
Is it like
several
iPad?
Yes.
Give it a go. I'll give it a sweep. Is that what you call them?
Yeah, get one in the Apple shop. Get yourself an iClaudius.
Can we get iClaudius on the sound system? make it so.
We could do this all as various actors. This is what...
You sound like a gaggle of schoolgirls. A young tuck.
if Les Dennis had a foobar show, it'd be quite similar to this.
Les Dennis? Is he famous for like
impressions?
It would mainly be Mavis.
Mavis from Coronation Street was his big one.
Les, I'm a big fan of your Mavis impression. Make
it Do you know what though? I believe that Ian McKellen probably is a big fan of his Mavis impression.
That was that Ian McKellen?
No, that was Stuart. McKellen's more hang on, how's McKellen?
Oh, you young hobbit. Hello. I can't do the voice.
This has become like an episode of The Trip, but with two people that can't do impressions that well.
Well, listen back to it now. I think you'll find you'll be eating your words once you've heard our Patrick Stewart impressions next to each other.
Hello, it's me, James Mason. I've come back to have a chat with Nick and Matt in the studio.
Oh, no, and I'm hanging off Mount Rushmore, and here's James Mason stood on the side of... Oh, James. Jimmy, please. Here's some candy for your sweet tooth and all your other sweet parts. I love it. Sorry, guys. This one's for us.
I think they all are, aren't they? They all are.
I think it's been such a cracking 17 minutes so far. Let's do some fan mail. What I'd say is that this fan mail really keeps me going week on week. I check iTunes daily.
Daily, several times a day.
And
refresh.
I was surprised, actually, overwhelmed, that this week when I clicked on iTunes and I looked at our ratings and reviews, we'd gone up to 88 reviews.
88.
From 82. Two of those, obviously, are 4 stars from a couple of Billy Bellends, but
88.
That's 86 5-star reviews. Mm. And that means quite a lot to me. But I wonder if we look back at that little boy that was born in Finsbury Park and
Christmas Day.
Grew up in St Albans. When he looked to the future, let's say he was 4, when he looked 34 years out, forward in the future. Maybe the biggest Christmas treat that he could ask for this year would be to get up to 100... 5-star reviews.
Whoa.
Now, he's not a beggar, and he wouldn't lower himself like the other podcasts that you might listen to. But if we can get up to 100 5-star reviews, then maybe it'll make everything worthwhile.
Mm. It'd be a better world, wouldn't it?
A better world if we get... So that means that we need to get 102 reviews by Christmas. Not just by Christmas, by next Wednesday.
And maybe on Christmas Eve, if you don't do that, perhaps you'll avoid being visited by three ghosts who might tell you...
Keep it light.
Two ghosts. Two me and ghosts. Nick. Me and Nick will be dressed in with a sheet on our head. Going, oh, you didn't give us five stars.
Yes, mother! Yes, mother!
You sound like a gaggle of schoolgirls.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
It was very good.
Like a gaggle of schoolgirls.
We're absolutely nailing this.
Absolutely great. Anyway, so we've got some...
heavy water.
Heavy... No, because this is Ian McKellen now doing Patrick Stewart lines. You've got some heavy water in your hands. Oh, I it's just the...
Who's this? What's this a specific impression of?
It's are the donuts for everyone? Really? Oh, thank you very much. With sprinkles, please.
That was Ian McKellen on the set of Last Action Hero. It's a big Hollywood moment for him. He couldn't believe his eyes. Donuts for all.
Ian McKellen. Oh, no, I've just gone. I've switched on to another aspect of the show. We've still got the Deer Hunter music going.
I know. It's perfect for it. I've got to the end of the dip. We'll just wait for that to go through again. There we go.
There we go. Lovely.
So we've got an email. Good day, guys. Enjoyed listening to last week's show. You mentioned that Rocky may be the best franchise. What about Mission Impossible? Only the second movie would get less than 4 stars, in my opinion. Is that an entire one, or does it continue? Continues. Have you ever played the IMDb game? The idea of the game is to select the top 250 highest-ranked movies on the app, and starting at number one, Shawshank Redemption, make your way down the list until you get to a film you haven't seen. And that is your score. The person with the highest score wins. Just a bit of fun. If you need an extra couple of minutes.
How dare you?
What a fucking cunt.
What?
What a fucking patronising fucking cunt. An extra couple of minutes of content. Most people get caught out by Charlie Chaplin, old chappers. Films or...
Bloody
Japanese samurai movie. Pictures. All the best, Francis Jolly, or as I like to call you, Cunty McCunt Cunt.
2 minutes of content.
2 minutes.
This is packed.
2 minutes of
absolutely
content.
Absolutely packed.
You
how
fucking
many?
Prick, Francis Jolly. Fucking. Do you know what? We need another extra 5-star review because whatever you've written here doesn't count. All right? Fuck you. Extra 2 minutes of fucking content. Ironically, we probably squeezed about another couple of minutes of content being so bloody frustrated and angered by you. I'm not impressed either. No, fucking...
Ian McKellen's furious.
Shall I delete his comments?
Make it so.
Fucking Patrick
Stewart, thank you.
Over it. That actually does sound like a fun game. But
it does.
I've never seen Shawshank Redemption, so I've got a score of 0.
Wow.
So that didn't really fill 2 minutes, did it, dickhead? Now we are on to our next... I really shouldn't stop getting so angry.
To be fair, it was more Ian McKellen was the most furious.
Last review is on 21st of November. It's not actually. If you scroll down, there's some. The reviews are all out of whack. There was like a review from like the 8th or something. I don't know what the date is today. It's the 8th today, isn't it?
7th.
If you scroll down, the newest reviews aren't at the top. Therapy stars. I've listened to this podcast. Yeah, this is an oldie.
Can't even see it. Oh yeah, there we go.
I mean, we're doing this section now and we've got no material to do it with.
John Garrido
is Real Editor John Fan Club. How I have missed this. I mean, we haven't been away.
Good
how,
morning you
how
two.
Have I missed this?
How I oh yeah, yeah I think
be,
you should
how have I missed I mean
but
John,
you're in how I have missed so it sounds like gone,
your,
how I have missed this
John considering your at symbol is Real Editor John, you probably need to give yourself a bit of an edit. Fan Club, how I have missed this. We've not been away. Good morning, you two. Good morning, John. Good morning. Oh, it's John. John from our friend in America. When you say good morning, we say, that's
actually
afternoon.
Yes.
And he goes, not if you're listening to it in the States. And we go, bloody hell, what a state.
How I have missed this sounds quite...
Are you typing these reviews yourself?
Did, are they all written by you, Natalie? Joyous. Does Natalie write her reviews?
Fuck this. I never wanted to do the review section in the first place. Right? It's basically the radio equivalent of self-fellatio. But this is just is an all-time low of us stalling for time as Natalie writes our five-star reviews.
I got an email from your parents. Hello, Jean and Tony.
Jean and Tony.
Telling me, giving us some advice on the show. Should I read that one?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Timbot Toe says, great Friday fun. Never fail to make you smile. Great facial hair also.
I assume that's aimed at me.
Yeah, because mine isn't.
It's patchy.
It's patchy, isn't it, at best.
Are you fucking kidding me? How long does it take to copy and paste a fucking thing? Fucking... I mean, I've got so much to talk
Someone about. Says, 5 stars, fab. Joyous 2 hours.
Oh, fuck this. That was Natalie writing it up herself. No, it wasn't. How come it was coming up word by word rather than all in one block?
You're
typing it. Just copy and paste it off of... Oh, God. Or just get iTunes up on our screen. Just get iTunes up on our screen. Just get iTunes up on our screen. This is our last live show of the year. We're pre-recording next Wednesday to release next... So if you have any reviews, but get them in by next Wednesday.
Get them in for Christmas.
We want 103...
By Wednesday.
To make up for the 2 4-star reviews and to make up
for
Francis Jolly with their suggestions... That quite frankly, offensive. speaking of Gene and Tony, I did my Naked Gun talk at the BFI.
Of course you did.
What day was that?
Tuesday.
I did mine. My mum and my dad came to see Naked Gun.
And was it fun?
I got to sit next to my dad and watch a comedy film in the cinema, which I haven't... I mean, we've been... I think we've probably seen more action films than anything. But we watched Naked Gun. My mum was sat on the other side of my dad. I don't think my mum had seen it before. I said to my mum, have you seen it before? And she was like, oh, yes. And I'm just like, in my head, I can't remember a time when you'd have seen it. I remember we all went as a family to see 33 and a third.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the cinema to see 2½ with my sister. And my sister rented out Naked Gun originally. I don't remember my mum ever sitting down and watching Naked Gun with us.
I think she's lied to you.
I think it's one of those things where where she just assumed that she'd seen it because she'd seen a film.
Yeah.
And so we all sat there and I love the BFI. And I learned some stuff about the Naked Gun on my way there and I was just like, oh, I got to say that. And I got to sit next to my parents and watch Naked Gun and they laughed all the way through it. And that's nice.
It is.
It reminded me of being a child again.
What a beautiful story.
That and I shat myself.
Did that remind you of being little as well?
No.
No.
No. It's just the future. There we go. A couple of legends. Not comedy legends. I haven't seen a lot of films/shows in
Moo Lifetime. 16.
Bracket 16.
16 years old.
And I don't know a lot about films/shows. And to be honest, majority of the time... I have no idea what... Come on, mate.
Films they're talking about.
And to be honest, majority of the time, I have no idea what films/shows they're talking about. But I love listening to this podcast every week.
Brilliant.
Brackets, usually on catch-up. Because it makes me smile, and it makes me laugh. Met Nick a couple of times. Love him. Absolute legend. Haven't met Nat yet, but he sounds like a great guy.
He is. He is great.
Keep up the good work, lads.
Smiley face. That's really lovely, actually. What a lovely... that's very nice.
It's got me choked up a bit. This is from I Am Robot. Mm-hmm. Fab. 5 stars. A joyous 2-hour ramble with some great moments.
Some great moments.
So good. Macca thinks he invented it.
Yes.
And... best pop culture podcast that FUBAR has to offer. Neg! Another neg! Absolute what? Compared to who else? Fucking hell. Very, very funny, great stuff. Brief, concise, doesn't give me a lot for the old wank bank, but I can make that work. What a lovely week that
Wait,
was.
It has been a lovely week.
What a lovely week a really of lovely. Comment. Just let's remember, guys, that the world is a community, and if you make each other feel good, then they'll go on and make other people feel good in return.
Pay it forward, like Oprah would say.
Or Kevin Spacey. It's all right, it's good.
We should have another button for that.
Spacey! what did I watch this week? Working Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Spacey's in Working Girl.
Is he?
Right, so
he pop up.
So we're getting to the half-hour mark, so this is... I've got so much I want to talk to you about.
So much content. We couldn't even put another 2 minutes in it.
The basic structure of the show is half-hour of Waffle, Alice Cooper song, then half hour of actually talking about something, and then if we've got a radio guest, we'll have 15 minutes of talking about something, and then a 15-minute radio guest chat. Then we'll play your song.
Yes.
Or a song directly...
related to what we've been talking about.
Related to what is coming up. Then we'll have a guest on for an hour where we'll talk a bit of chat with them. Then we'll play their song. And then we'll talk about what they're interested in. And then the last couple of minutes we'll play a game and then a song to play out. I'm not saying this for the benefit of the listeners at home. I'm saying this for the benefit of Natalie, our producer, because just making sure that you are aware that there is some structure to this. So we've thought about it. I know that you have, and we're going to play. So we'll talk about the stuff when we get back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. This is. I love this song. I don't normally introduce it. This is off the absolutely. If you're not into Alice Cooper, then don't start with this album. But this is one.
Is this Whiskey and Lace? Is it or
no? Never listen to that. If you love Alice Cooper, never listen to Lace and Whiskey.
Lace and Whiskey.
But this is off Dada, which he doesn't remember recording. But this is as close as he's got to a Christmas song.
I got a job in Atlanta in a mall playing Santa, not because of any talent, but because I was the only one the suit would fit. Everybody shopping, little sticky kids were hopping on my lap with the fingers in my beard. I guess they thought that I was really it. She sat down on my lap and said to me, I'm 23 and I need someone. You look like someone who can play with me. Stay with me, all day with me. Cause I'm in no man's land.
Can't seem to find a real man. You know I'm looking for a steel man.
She said I'm in no man's land.
I'm gonna show you a real good time. I'm gladly paying double overtime.
She was begging to be mine, but my job was on the line. Should I stay? And the kids standing in line, they were whining, they were crying, and the mothers, they were screaming in hysterics, and I swear I never heard such profanity. I dropped my suit on the floor, they were trying to block the door, they were calling her a whore, they were driving to digital insanity. We drove away in a Mercedes-Benz, dirty blinds split into debris. She said, I wanna put you under my tree. You're just a little gift from me to me. Cause I'm in no man's land.
Can't seem to find a real man. You know I'm looking for a steel man.
She said I'm in no man's land.
You know I'm ready for a real good time. I'm gladly paying double overtime.
She had money all her life. Wasn't looking to become my wife. She said I hope you understand. I just want to.
She didn't know that there was more of me.
on FUBAR Radio.
Extra 2 minutes to fill. Fuck me. how I have missed this. Do you know what? I think that he meant it exactly like that.
How I have missed. Oh, yeah. How I have missed this.
I miss it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was tweeting about it in the week and I was just like, fucking hell, has it only been 5 days?
We had that one that we did a pre-record last week and we didn't do one in 10 days or something. You go, God, it feels like ages.
I felt like that felt like an actual regular week though. With that 10-day gap, I was just like, oh, a lot's happened, but this one feels like Sian Harris. Last week.
Yes, it was.
And
yeah.
That feels like a month ago. She was amazing.
Great guest.
Great guest. Great time. Terrible tonsillitis. Feeling much better, thanks, Nat. I've just been on a course of antibiotics.
Not antidepressants.
No, I've just started. No, but I have started a new course of antidepressants today. They've not kicked in yet. It's a different one. Than what I did before, because that didn't work out for me. So I'll keep you updated. No, I won't. It's a pre-record next week.
Pre-record next week, and then we've got like, it's like we're on our Christmas holidays, aren't we? We haven't got another fan club.
I would come in at Christmas though.
Me too. Christmas Day.
If fan club was on Christmas Day, I'd come in on Christmas Day. Would I? Yeah, I would. It says more about my home life though. So I had a bit of a bumper. I've seen fucking loads this week, so I'm just going to blitz through stuff.
Yeah.
I saw Roxanne again.
Oh, yeah. I keep thinking I need to watch that again. It's been years.
Really amazing. I'm sort of like going back and watching Steve Martin films. Steve Martin is always a bit maybe too intellectual. He's got intellectual aspirations. So you'll see something like The Jerk and you go, ha, 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 ha. But then you'll see something like Roxanne and he's put lots of kind of like... And I'm not like saying that... I guess when I was a child, I preferred Three Amigos Steve Martin to Roxanne L.A. Story Steve Martin.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I love L.A. Story.
I think so Roxanne might have been the one I saw first and sort of went backwards, I think.
I think also as a child, you watch it and he's got like a big nose. Yeah. And you go, yeah, sure, this is for me.
Plot.
And then you realise it's all about sex. It's all about, but not like, it's not like a sex comedy. It's all about Daryl Hannah being in love with a man's physical form and another man's brain, intelligence. Mm. And so so I guess it's a little bit, not confusing, but it's a little bit much for like, I think for me when I was five, watching it. I couldn't have been five because it wasn't made when I was five, but seven. There you go. Anyway, so Roxanne, I watched that again. I watched Your Vice is a Locked Door and Only I Have the Key.
Is that a giallo?
It is a giallo.
I think I've seen it. I've never seen the movie though.
It's based on The Black Cat by
Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe. And I have, I would estimate 4 copies of The Black Cat by various different giallo directors. I've got Dario Argento's. I think there was...
there's a Fulci.
I've got Fulci. I've now got this, and I think I've got another one, but there's also one called Two Evil Eyes, where one of the stories is about a black cat. I can't remember. I think that might be George A. Romero's one.
It's because those Poe ones are basically, they're pretty much, they're almost like poems, aren't they? So you can really interpret them any way you like. So I think a lot of them are just films where they've gone, we'll call it Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat, but basically we'll just put a black cat in it at some point.
It's like The Telltale Heart as well, right? Where it's kind of like a murder or something gets witnessed by a cat and the cat keeps coming back and reminding the murderer that they've done this crime and then it just sends them crazy.
Well,
The Telltale Heart is somebody gets murdered and put underneath the floorboards and then their heart keeps...
Or they think they can hear the heartbeat.
So it's like basically it's the same thing, really. Mm. But
all the Edgar Allan Poe, Roger Corman movies are all like they're not really anything to do with Edgar Allan Poe.
No,
they're
he's just taken like, the title and he's gone, yeah. But he did like a series of them. Mm. Well, that was his answer to the Universal Monsters, wasn't it? Classic. They was the classic monsters, and so he went like, how do we not do a Frankenstein and a Dracula? And he goes, right, we'll get Vincent Price and we'll put him in all these Edgar Allan Poe films. And it was his own little empire, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I watched American Ninja for the first time.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that. That was a big one at my primary school. It was, has anyone seen American Ninja 4? It would always be that. You've seen that, that he throws a star at him. It was always like that. That was a big discussion in my primary school with the American Ninjas.
Well, I remember with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, when that came out, it was just like, well, apparently there's a nunchuck scene where Michelangelo hangs a man.
With his nunchucks.
With his nunchucks, and you go... Bloody hell, that sounds dark. Considering that the rest of the film is quite light. It's, no wonder they cut the bit where Michelangelo hangs a man.
I tell you what,
Oh, that actually, it was just like there was a kid at our school who said that who swore blind that he had access to a time machine and that he'd gone forward in the future. And Robin Williams played the Riddler in Batman 3, yeah. The third Batman film.
We had kids like that at my school.
And it was just kind of like you go, why would you make that up?
Yeah, I've seen it. I have seen it.
There was another kid at school that invented this thing that sounded amazing. It sounded like he well, I don't know if he invented it, but he said basically, and I thought it was from like a Highlander film until I'd seen all the Highlanders, where a man gets his head cut in half, but he's immortal. And so he gets the rule of these staples, loose staples on the table, and he lines them all up and he rams them together, puts them in a staple gun, and he staples his head back together, right? And he said it's in Highlander, and I watched the Highlander films, and it wasn't. And I went to him and I said, "Look, this is a really good idea.
Yeah,
did you make it up? Because it's not in those films." He goes, "No, I didn't make it up. It's in this thing." And then and you know, you spend the rest of your life looking for it, and it, and you know, look, if you've got a vivid imagination, you're making this stuff up. Just write it down. You know, because these are great ideas. You know, but you're just attributing it to a thing that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
or maybe it does exist, and I just haven't seen it. But I have looked.
We could go off. There's loads of this to go off there, and there's lies we heard as a child. Or even those, like, as a kid who was really fascinated by all the Batman movies, loved all the Batman movies, I always loved those alternative versions of the kind of 90s Batman movies that were, like, that never really made it. All those rumours about it. That was going to be Patrick Stewart, wasn't it? Mr Freeze was meant to be Patrick Stewart for a long time.
Why wouldn't you cast Patrick?
Yeah, perfect.
Why wouldn't you? Absolutely perfect.
Yeah,
he's
nailed
a,
it.
What, he's a scientist, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
And he's bald, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, his wife's died. He has a bit of pathos.
He looks almost exactly like he did in the Batman animated series.
Yeah.
Just put some red goggles. I mean, why would... whatever the fuck they were doing with the fucking... I'm so... It still annoys me, that thing. Because he's obviously miscast Arnold Schwarzenegger. He doesn't have a fucking... He doesn't have a fucking chance. But he loved it. He got paid fucking loads and loads and
top
loads.
Top billing
of money.
Again, wasn't it? In fact, all the villains always had top billing. And in fact, Batman Returns is the only one that doesn't, right? Jack Nicholson gets top billing in Batman.
And Val Kilmer gets top billing in Batman Forever.
Oh, does he? Does he?
Yeah.
But Arnie's top billing, isn't he, in Batman?
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
like,
Batman
Clooney's
and
like
Robin.
Third, isn't he, or something in the cast?
No, he's second.
Okay.
Come on, let's not be crazy. he's definitely second billing.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it was just like, it was 1997. It was the
wasn't
same
he like 20 million or something? He got something crazy, didn't he? It was like one of those like massive paydays for
the time. He got paid 30 million, I think, for Terminator 3, which was a couple of years later. But that's what, when he was making Terminator 3, he was just like, I'm not sure, I'm not going to do this without James Cameron. And he went and talked to James Cameron, and James Cameron said, yeah, do it. Just ask for as much money as possible. And so he said 30 million. But I think he really enjoyed Batman and Robin. Because it's exactly his sense of humour. Tragically. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age! You didn't even pause!
I watched Jingle All the Way this week.
Fuck me.
I'd never seen it. The thing was, right, about Arnie, when you watch it, you go, you've actually got really good comic timing, but your delivery is bad. But, like, your instincts are really on it. It's like, yeah, that's funny. Like, it's almost like he knows what he's doing, but it's like he wasn't able to deliver the jokes. For someone who's, like, known for, like, one-liners, it seemed weird that it's like, you just can't do the...
Is Jingle All the Way Chris Columbus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not a...
It's a weird film, Jingle All the Way.
Jingle All the Way had one of the best teaser trailers ever, where it was he played the Terminator. He was in True Lies. He was Commando, Predator, and now he's facing his biggest whatever challenge to date. And then it was like, oh, you have to get Turbo Man. And then it was like, and you go, and then it was kind of like, and it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger running around, punching a Santa in the face.
Punching a reindeer at one point.
Punching a reindeer in the face.
Probably the best bit of the film.
Jim Belushi turns up. And it was
reuniting the cast of Red Heat.
It was a supercut of all of the best bits, of visual bits of Jingle All the Way. And you go, wow, this looks absolutely great.
And they've got Chris Columbus. Oh no, it was John Hughes, wasn't it? Home Alone. What was that, Chris Columbus?
Home Alone was directed by Chris Columbus, written by John Hughes.
So we'll get the director of Home Alone to do another like Christmas comedy. We'll get the biggest star in the world to be in it.
And the writer of Gremlins.
Yeah.
Chris Columbus wrote Gremlins. A bit controversial. My favourite Christmas movie is Gremlins. Chris Columbus wrote Gremlins. He directed Home Alone. I think that you go, if you're going to make a fucking huge, big budget action movie about a guy that's trying to, if you're going to make John Wick, right, mm-hmm. about, they killed his dog and now he wants revenge. You know, it's just like, okay, cool. Then John Wick is basically, it's an action film that's based on a ridiculous premise. And I think if that's what you're going to do with Jingle All the Way, that's great. But don't make a family drama sitcom type thing where it's all about consumerism. It's really, it's an ugly film. I'm really just not.
Well, do you know what? I thought in that way, I think I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And there's lots of good, like.
Oh, I hate it.
I really liked.
The values in that film are so alien to I think what the majority of people feel.
I know what you mean. I almost didn't find that so much. I sort of think that it is that. I think they kind of do that well, because it's sort of, that's the values of it, but it's sort of, you know, the point of it is that it kind of doesn't matter in the end, because what little Jake Lloyd wants from the Phantom Menace is he just wants his dad around, really, doesn't he?
Yeah, but it's bullshit. The whole film is absolutely strung together pieces of shit, and I hate it. It's Phil Hartman's last film as well.
Yeah, he's great in it.
Yeah, but Phil Hartman was great in everything, you know. Every time you saw him in a film, you'd go, oh, he's great in that. Take the Amigos' clothes. He was in Three Amigos. That's from Three Amigos. Take the Amigos' clothes. And what else was he in? He was in Sergeant Bilko, also with Steve Martin. What else was he in? He was in Coneheads. He made a lot of bad films.
but if you're always good in them.
But he was always the best thing in them.
Then he does stick out. I really liked him as this sort of sleazy neighbour in it. I thought he was great.
He's great in that.
And just he's sort of doing these sort of quite sort of weird sort of double entendres in a kids' film. Feel a bit like, yeah, all right.
Oh,
okay.
These cockies. Yeah, he's really he is really good, but the film is shit.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it.
No,
I thought it was really odd. I thought it was really odd. And do you know what I mean? I mean. You're right in a way, because it's not a great film, but I think I was expecting it to be much worse than it was. I was like, oh.
It was exactly as bad as I...
Okay.
No, I wasn't expecting it to be bad. When it was what it was, I just was just like, oh, because there was a good film to be had out of this, and you haven't made it. You haven't even written it.
It's got a post-credit sequence like a Marvel movie.
We're setting up what? The Further Adventures of Turbo Man?
Yeah, we're sort of setting something up that I guess you were never going to see realised.
What was it?
The one at the end is his wife says, you've gone to so much effort to get Jake Lloyd as Turbo Man. It just makes me wonder, what have you got me for Christmas? Cut to Arnold pulling a face to camera.
Oh, boy. And then he leaps.
No,
The 1950s, where he plays a black woman. Quantum Leap.
I like the way it's
explained. I didn't want people to just be like, that's right. Well, as we've established earlier, our listeners have no knowledge of films or television.
It's worth pointing things out.
Just
it's worth
listening to our voices. I saw The Mountain Between Us. Idris Elba and Kate Winslet.
Never even heard of it.
The Mountain Between. It was a flop, massive flop.
That came out this year, did it?
Or? I think it came out either this year or last year. It's like a plane crash in the mountain movie. I don't really get Idris Elba. The Mountain Between Us is incredible. Idris Elba is brilliant in it. Kate Winslet is great. I've got a lot of time for Kate Winslet anyway. But what a movie. It's brilliant. And it's got like all of these emotional punches to it. It's just really great.
Okay. I've never heard of it.
Mountain Between Us. I highly recommend it. And then I started watching Atomic Blonde. Which I had to switch off because I thought it was so fucking annoying. And I was just like, do you know what's better than Atomic Blonde? Long Kiss Goodnight. So I started watching Long Kiss Goodnight. That's not as good as I remembered it. But that was like,
Isn't Long Kiss Goodnight, which has a thing at the end, which is got a weird premonition of like 9/11 and all kind of. It's quite some quite odd sort of. What's the word? Not premonition. Like, it does feel like, oh, you have sort of set up the whole of the sort of 2000s kind of terrorism kind of thing.
No, isn't that Swordfish?
No, it's not Swordfish.
Swordfish is another horrible, awful film. And not another one. A Long Kiss Goodnight I really like. But I taped it off of... Tapes? Oh, you're still using tapes, are you? So I taped it off of Sony...
Classic movies.
Sony Channel. There's like some sort of Sony Channel. Mm-hmm. And they do it in a way where... You know, like we were talking about ITV and then the news comes on.
Oh, yeah.
So I taped Long Kiss Goodnight and it only recorded the first hour. And then you've got to record... the second hour separately.
Oh.
And then you can't go back and get it. So I got the first hour and like the last 20 minutes of the film. And I was like, oh. So I only watched the first hour.
Bit about Long Kiss Goodnight is there was a thing where when it was originally made, the Samuel L. Jackson character was killed. But yes. They decided that they did some preview screenings and went, everyone wants that character to live at the end, so we can't kill him off. And so they've reshot it so that Samuel L. Jackson survives at the end. But the bit in where you think he's definitely dead and he actually comes back, I think Samuel L. Jackson actually says, "I'm alive, motherfuckers." He comes out and he just says the thing, which is just like, but it actually makes you go, yeah, because you want him to live. And he comes back and just comes out and goes, "I'm alive, motherfuckers." And you go, that is what you want him to say. But it's almost like too on the nose to be like, is just like, he has said exactly the thing that you want.
No, it's really great.
They've changed it and it's almost like, they've got Shane Black there and they've gone, we'll need to rewrite this. So Samuel Jackson comes back. But what's he going to say? And he goes, oh, he was dead. So we'll just have him come out and just shout out, "I'm alive, motherfuckers." And you go, perfect, perfect, yeah. It's really fun. When I saw it, I think I watched it last Christmas, in fact, and it was, and that was a bit that really tickled me.
I've not seen the whole thing for many years. Just the first hour.
Oh, I really loved it last year. I had a real,
I think it's a good film. Anyway, so I did all that. And some others. Oh, The Sinner, season one. And because I've been so ill, so mm-hmm. I've just been watching... Oh,
of course, you've been stuck indoors.
So I watched The Sinner Season 1 on Saturday, and then The Sinner Season 2...
I don't know what The Sinner is.
...on Sunday. The Sinner is Bill Pullman. This isn't really what I wanted to talk about. I had a really interesting thing to talk about.
Well, I was going to say, we've got these things up, you know, this...
Yeah. But The Sinner is Bill Pullman doing a TV detective series.
Okay.
And Bill Pullman is always kind of like, Bill Pullman... he's the boyfriend in Sleepless in Seattle. It's the fiance in Sleepless in Seattle, and he's in While You Were Sleeping, and he's the president in Independence Day. And but he's kind of like not bland, but he's kind of like he's too nice.
Mm.
You know.
I think I saw him once described as Bill Pullman looks like if Jeff Daniels and Robin Williams had a baby.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And you go, yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Right. Yeah, he's in, but better looking, I think, than what you imagine. And Spaceballs.
Yes, of course he's Spaceballs.
And he was in, he did a Ben Stiller one, detective film, Something Zero, Less Than Zero.
Oh, right, yeah.
It wasn't called Less Than Zero, it was called...
Isn't it? I know exactly what you mean.
Zero Effect. So he's done a bunch of stuff, but he's always seems so nice. in Jeff, fucking, I'm going to call him Jeff Daniels. Bill Pullman in The Sinner is absolutely incredible, to the point that I kept saying out loud how amazing he was. Like, just, he's incredible in it. Like, I think one of the best, one of the, some of the best acting I've seen in any, especially the first season. But some of the best acting I've seen from a main, from an actor in any TV series. I just thought he was so good in it. Like, everything is...
I think I've always liked him more than you have. I think I've always had a, I've had a lot of time for
him. I've liked him,
yeah.
But he's like one of them people that's kind of, not bland, but he's almost like wallpaper. I suppose that's
I guess he's someone, I reckon Bill Pullman is one of those people who's like maybe number 8 or 9 on your wants list for leading man. And they've gone through all the other people and they've gone...
I think that's generous.
Okay. But like, he does get to be that. He does get to be in films.
Yeah, sure. But he's kind of like, hey, who do we want as Meg Ryan's nice boyfriend?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll get Bill Pullman.
That's solid.
Because we've already got Tom Hanks as the nicest man on the planet. So Bill Pullman is kind of like, he's like, well, maybe he's like a, he's like a second tier romantic lead, maybe.
Mm.
But yeah, but I, but that's doing him a disservice. I've always liked him. I just think that he's not kind of like my go-to.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's so good in this film that it's made me reevaluate everything I've ever seen before. There you go. So anyway, so this week, on top of all of that, I watched Working Girl, Presumed Innocent, and Frantic. Three Harrison Ford movies that aren't Indiana Jones or Star Wars. And then I also watched Internal Affairs, which is Richard Gere.
Yes.
Jagged Edge, which is Jeff Bridges. And Black Rain, which is Michael Douglas. Yeah. Andy Garcia is in Black Rain and Internal Affairs. Glenn Close is in Jagged Edge, and she's also in Fatal Attraction.
She certainly is.
With Michael Douglas, who's in Black Rain.
Yeah.
Basically, what I got to thinking was...
They're all the same film.
We were talking... they're not the same film. They're the same... They're variations of the same actor. So you've got the four... You've got the four main 80s leads. They're not action stars. They make kind of thrillers and sometimes sort of like quite sexually... explicit erotic thrillers and crime thrillers and cop detective thrillers and stuff like that, but they're all kind of like another thing. So you've got like you've got Kevin Costner, you've got Richard Gere, you've got Harrison Ford, and you've got Michael Douglas, and they're all in the same wheelhouse. Then underneath that you have Mel Gibson, who is almost a genre all to himself. He's got two franchises. He's got Mad Max and Lethal Weapon. And he is also making sort of like similar films with the same people. So Sigourney Weaver's in Working Girl. Sigourney Weaver is also in The Year of Living Dangerously.
You'd probably also have someone like Tom Berenger at the time.
No. Tom Berenger is muddy in this. Tom Berenger is not in that. He's not in that. So so Mel Gibson is as big as Kevin Costner.
He's not the big...
This is what we're talking about here. So Kevin Costner... Mel Gibson is as big as Kevin Costner, Richard Gere, Harrison Ford and Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
But he's not up for the same parts. Whereas I would say Kevin Costner is interchangeable a lot of the time with Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford in Presumed Innocent, you could quite easily see Michael Douglas playing a Presumed Innocent part, although that's a very similar film to Fatal Attraction. Then you've got Richard Gere, who's just an arsehole in everything that he does. But you could put Richard Gere in Black Rain and you could recast it. And then I was thinking, and then the tier below that, but you, so you've got Kevin Costner, Richard Gere, Harrison Ford, Michael Douglas. Then you've got Mel Gibson. And then underneath that, you've got Kurt Russell and Jeff Bridges, who are sort of not necessarily interchangeable, but they're of the same kind of thing. Where you could put, well, Jeff Bridges was in Starman, which is a John Carpenter film.
Yes.
Which is also...
And it does, it sometimes has that thing where you do think of it like, oh, wait, no, it's Bridges, isn't it? That's not... You can almost imagine it as the other actors.
You could put Richard Gere in Backdraft, and it's the same sort of spiky character that Kurt Russell played. Then I was thinking Pretty Woman is one of my all-time favourite films, right? Richard Gere, I don't love Richard Gere the same way I love Harrison Ford. What you notice about something like Frantic, which was a French-based Roman Polanski film, made in 88, I think? Or was it 90?
I would be a bit.
Frantic was 88. And Working Girl was 88. And he's so good at light comedy in Working Girl. And then there's a little bit of light comedy in Frantic. And the later Harrison Ford films were like Firewall, where there isn't really any light comedy in that. It's just like, we'll get him to be like, she was my wife, you know, when he does his Richard Nixon impression. Right? She was my wife. I am not a crook. So you've got all of the... So Witness, you could recast... I mean, I want to get into this, so maybe we'll talk about this on Wednesday.
Okay.
But you could recast Witness with... who could you put? Kevin Costner could do Witness. And then you've got Mosquito Coast and... Harrison Ford. I mean, it's an odd one for Harrison Ford anyway, but I don't know if anyone else could do that. Frantic, definitely Michael Douglas, Richard Gere, maybe not Kevin Costner. Mm-hmm. Kevin Costner's like all American.
Yeah.
Like, but Kevin Costner's like the American flag. And Harrison Ford is like the all American guy.
Yeah.
Right.
And those thrillers, 80s and 90s thrillers, are quite similar to what we were talking about the other week with like the.
Yeah, the 90s thrillers.
The kind of John Grisham ones. But these are like a different. But they are sort of very similar films, but in a slightly earlier.
Yeah. But they're all very kind of. But, yeah. But then Richard Gere is like the American dream gone wrong. Mm hmm. And Michael Douglas is like an upside-down American flag. But do you know what I mean? They're all sort of like of a thing. They're all sort of like American leading actors, but they all do a slightly different thing from each other. But they are sort of... So you could put... Now, as much as I love Pretty Woman, and I think it's perfect, I've never... And I think Richard Gere is great in it, but imagine Pretty Woman with Harrison Ford in it.
Mm, you really can, though.
And you go... Well, I would like to see that film.
Mm.
Even, I mean, how do you make it even better? I think maybe it would be better.
Yeah.
Imagine Pretty Woman with Michael Douglas in it, and don't want to imagine that film. It's Michael Douglas crying over a dead prostitute that he's just hacked up, and he's hiding it from his wife. It's kind of like,
yeah, it is. It's queasier.
And then Kevin Costner is kind of like, you can't really imagine Kevin Costner doing that.
Mm. I think Richard Gere's in it. He's a prettier actor, isn't he, I guess, than the others.
Yeah, but he goes out of his way to play against type. Mm. I mean, I think Richard Gere is really interesting. Anyway, they've got loads of the same supporting cast, so I think we'll go away, do some homework, and on Wednesday we'll talk about it again.
Yes.
Right, going to play a song, and then we're going to get a guest on. This is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance from the film that we were talking about earlier with John Wayne, James Stewart and Lee Marvin, and it turns out that the guy who did the fucking theme tune to The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance was Gene fucking Pitney.
Yeah, and I've made that my choice. It'll be my music choice this week.
It's his choice. It's not been thrust on him. It's not been thrust on him. Here we go.
When Liberty Valance rode to town, the women folk would hide, they'd hide. When Liberty Valance walked around, the men would step aside. Because the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was mighty good. From out of the east a stranger came, a law book in his hand. Oh man, the kind of a man the West would need to tame a troubled land. Cause the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was mighty good. Many a man would face his gun, and many a man would fall. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all. The love of a girl can make a man stay on when he should go. Stay on, just trying to build a peaceful life where love is free to grow. But the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When the final showdown down came at last. A law book was no good. Alone in the parade, she prayed that he'd return that fateful night. Oh, that night. When nothing she said could keep her man from going out to fight. From the moment a girl gets to be full grown, the very first thing she learns. When two men go out to face each other, only one returns. Everyone heard two shots ring out. One shot made Liberty fall. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all.
Nick and Nat's fan club.
It's like
then
this.
We're back, and the Liberty Valance. That was like one of those songs that just tells you the entire plot of the film and everything.
Yeah, like Partners in Crime, Turtle Power.
Spoiler!
If you listen to that song, that does the entire plot of the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film, including the ending, including the ending of the film.
But it comes on at the end, right?
Yeah, it comes on at the end of the film. But if you just listen to the single, you'd be. I mean, that's all the film.
I bought the single.
Me too.
I bought the soundtrack album and the single.
Absolutely.
We're joined in the studio now by Bunny Galore.
Hi guys.
Welcome.
Have I put your volume up?
Two.
Hello, talk.
Hello, boys.
Yes, I've done it.
Hear me.
We're live. You are a TV presenter?
Yes, I specialise in horror movies, bad horror movies. There's a huge tradition in America called horror hosting. Mm-hmm. We never had it here. I think there's one guy that did it on BBC Two called Dr. Horrible, I want to say.
Oh, Dr. Terror.
Dr. Terror, thank you. Which is...
on BBC Two?
Yeah.
Yes, when was this?
There's, about 92. It's Guy Henry from Holby City Now, and he played Governor Tarkin in the new Star Wars and Rogue One.
Yes.
New. It's not that new anymore. And he was in full devil makeup, a bit like, you know, Red Dwarfy.
Can you look that up?
I think it's Dr. Terror. I want to say Dr. Terror's House of Horror. There's another similar show that was a comedy show.
Dr. Terrible's House of Horror.
Yeah, so don't get confused with that, but I think it's Dr. Terror.
Dr. Terror, that's right. Dr. Terror did like a BBC Two double bill of
hammers and things like that. Yeah. But
remember that at all.
No, it's really... I'd forgotten about it. It's only when I was researching it when I first started doing it. But in America, every city has their own horror host. Going back to the 50s with Vampyra originally, mm-hmm. and then very famously with Elvira from about 1981 onwards, and obviously had a movie, the Blu-ray's about to come out in the UK, not in America, weirdly, just in the UK. I think that's the pivotal moment, because that's when people discovered it, and that's when you got shows like...
Yeah, yeah.
And there's quite a lot of like Cyber Babes on various channels and latex going... Now our next film is this, so I think I'm a little bit more. I know I can still be quite sexy, but I'm a little bit more of an expert in the field, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Because one of my favourite films was Fright Night.
Yes,
because you've got Peter Vincent, who's the host. And what's the other?
Well, you've got it in Gremlins 2.
Gremlins 2, that's right.
Grandpa from the Monsters?
It's someone who's based on that, isn't it? Who is it playing?
It's the fucking guy out of Miracle on 34th Street.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. It's Robert Prosky, is it?
Fine.
Robert, what?
Fine. Okay. I'm saying that I'm going to allow you to have that because I don't know.
Okay.
Look, we can't both use the mouse at the same time.
Now, boys, don't fight over me, whatever you do.
I'm going to just type in Miracle.
I know exactly who you mean. I love that remake of Miracle.
I saw it in cinema twice, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely adore it.
I don't know that I've ever seen it.
Miracle on 34th Street!
I've seen the original.
Oh, right. So, I'll tell you this. I was working in... this is one of my favourite Christmas stories. I was working in... where was I? It was at the campaign for Real Ale place in St Albans, right? And so they send out all of these real beer guides and real best pub guides or whatever they are. And I was working there at Christmas, and the people in the office were hard work, and I was temping. And what I'd do, what I'd have to do is I'd have to, all these books of the real, what is it, the Good Beer Guide. Is that what it's called?
I don't know, but I know like that.
The
I
Real
understand.
Ale Guide. Mm-hmm. The real, the best real, anyway, there were all these books that were being sent out for Christmas, and they were kind of like the size of a brick. And you'd put them in a cardboard box thing, envelope thing, like you'd get from Amazon.
Right.
And I'd put them down, and slowly but surely, I would build a wall around me. And so by the end of the day, that was my one job. And so by the end, I had to package them up so that they were available for Christmas. And then by the end of the day, there'd be a wall around me. Then the postman would come in at the end of the day, take the wall away, and then the next day, I'd start building the wall. And there was one guy who worked there. And they were all really nice people, but there was one guy that worked there and said, "I was putting the old Christmas tree up the other day, and putting the old Christmas tree up the other day, and in the background I was playing. We had on the telly Miracle on 34th Street, and the woman in the office said, 'Miracle on 34th Street, what's that about?' And he goes, 'Well, well, you've never seen Miracle on 34th Street. What's that about?' 'Well, I'll tell you. So it starts off with there's a parade, right? There's a parade, and there's a Santa Claus, and he's on the parade, and he's been drinking, and the owner of the shop that owns the Santa Claus, he walks by, and he goes, "Hello, Santa. Are you ready to do the parade?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm ready." He goes, "Hang on a minute. Have you been drinking?" He goes, "Yeah." Turns out that he's been drinking. She goes, "Well, you can't go on the parade if you've been drinking." He goes, "Well, what do you mean I can't go on the parade if I've been drinking?" And he goes, "Yeah, well, you can't go on the parade if I've been drinking." And over here, there's this old man. He's called Chris Kringle. And he overhears and he says, "I can't help but hear that I've got a Santa suit. I could fill in for Santa." And he goes, "So we've got a suit for you." He goes, no, "I've got my own. Don't worry." And so he goes away, doesn't he? And he gets his own Santa suit. And he comes out and he's got all the bits, isn't it? It's got all the trimmings to it. It's red, and it's got gold buttons, and it's got Dancer on the button, and Prancer and Comet, and he puts it all on, and he gets on the parade, and he does it for 2 hours, where it's just literally doing a blow by blow account. It's just, wow. What's it about? What's it about, mate? It's about a fucking apartment store Santa that's got proof that he's Santa, right? It's not about the plot. That's not what it's about.
The original Miracle on 34th
Street. Imagine being in that office. Imagine being in that office, knowing what I know. Right? Knowing I've seen that film. I've seen it like 15 times. Right? It's on every fucking Christmas. Somebody in that fucking office having never seen it before and going like, not even to the point that I can't even imagine what that could be. What, Miracle on 34th Street? What's that about? And then the other person going blow by blow through everything, actually adding more detail than was actually in the actual fucking film for fucking 2 hours.
I have to say, no.
Wait, someone has to say something.
No, the fact you're building a fort on a daily basis to keep the energy of the people around you away.
Yeah, so it's metaphorical, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's metaphorical.
It was metaphorical.
The original Miracle on 34th Street came out in June in the States.
Did it?
And no one knew what it was about. So it came out and it was a secret that had anything to do with Christmas.
What?
And if you watch the trailer for Miracle on 34th Street, it's about how you market a film without being able to tell people what it's about. But it was so popular that it ran for 6 months and was still playing at Christmas.
That's crazy.
It was. It wasn't meant to be a Christmas movie. It was just like the idea was it was all a secret.
I want to think
they marketed
this
film.
Late 40s, but I can't.
I think it's
50s.
Yeah. I think it's probably.
Is
yeah.
it Natalie Wood?
Natalie Wood's a little girl. Yeah.
So yes, it would be then. Yeah.
Naked Gun came out at Christmas.
Did it? Mm. I didn't know that.
I found that out the other day.
I bet you did. I bet you did. So, Bunny, we're talking about horror hosts. By the way, it was Robert Prosky.
Robert Prosky
is Miracle on 34th Street remake and Gremlins 2.
Yeah. But he plays like the Grandpa Munster.
He does.
Yeah, he's playing Grandpa Munster.
I think people kept on telling me that it was Grandpa Munster.
I always thought it was.
And I think, yeah, so did I. And I think also...
I didn't.
Grandpa Munster actually did a horror host show.
Oh, really?
But it was like they sometimes would do them as morning shows, so it's kind of like... they would be monster movies type, not like horror. They'd be like, you know, Godzilla type of movies. So I think he had done it. So I think that's where it came from.
But I guess the difference with you and all the kind of previous horror hosts is you're also a fan, right? You enjoy these movies.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, I love the bad movies, and I've always loved. Thank you, darling. I've always loved cheesy movies, and I wish I could get to see show good movies, but oh no, I've got The Brain That Wouldn't Die and Teenagers from Outer Space. And
but you showed Night of the Living Dead at Halloween.
Yes, that's the only one.
Was it the original?
It's the original, yes.
Because I was reading about Tom Savini, because there was a fuck up when they were delivering it. It was called Night of. It was called
Are you telling
Night
me?
Of the Living. Demons, Night of the Living
Creatures, or something.
Yeah, Night of the Ghouls, or something, something like that.
And they changed the title on the way to the printers, and they didn't copyright the title.
Which is why, because all the films I do are out in public domain, and Night of the Living Dead slips through the. But I think it's become more infamous, you know, more than it would be if it was in copyright.
Yeah, I mean, it's been remade. But all of those films are really fucked up. Where there was like a Day of the Dead remake that had Ving Rhames in it, which was. Nothing to do with the Dawn of the Dead remake, which also had Ving Rhames in it. But it was
liked that Day of the Dead one, the one in the shopping mall. The first 10 minutes.
Zack Snyder?
It was the first time, just after 28 days later, when zombies could be fast.
Yeah.
And they released that first 12 minutes, which is kind of like the female lead getting to the shopping mall online. And that was heart pounding.
I think
the rest
brilliant.
Of the movie, I'm not sure how good or bad it is nowadays. I just remember that first section.
I think it's brilliant. I think in terms of remakes, I mean, I don't think that. I know. But I don't think the original Dawn of the Dead is untouchable. Mm. And I thought that the remake was a bit more fun. Yeah. And I really think that opening, you know, like you say, 10, 12 minutes is just incredible.
Heart-pounding. And it's quite hard. There's not many remakes that I like. I think that, I was going to say, the Amityville Horror, I think is quite a good remake.
The original isn't that good. I think
it's why. I think it's usually when I don't remember the original films that well.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm more forgiving.
It's who's in the original? It's James Brolin is the original. Mm. And I really love James Brolin. But the original is kind of like the Amityville Horror. I find Amityville Horror as a title kind of a bit sort of like muddled because of Amityville in Jaws. Because that's where it's set.
Amity Island,
yeah, that's right. And so Amityville is kind of like, right. And then, but there was Amityville Horror, there was loads of sequels. And then I also think that it's almost like its reputation precedes it. So you feel like you've seen it before you've seen it. And then when you actually watch the original Amityville, it's kind of like, it's all right. Yeah. And then the remake with Ryan Reynolds is kind of like, it's kind of like slicker.
Well, I like it now, I don't know. But at the time, I really enjoyed it. But I think it's because it's when I don't know the originals very well, and then I'm kind of a lot more forgiving.
I'm not fussed by it. Like, when people do remakes of anything, I always think it doesn't matter. You can still watch the original. It's fine if someone wants to do a remake of anything.
I find bad sequels worse.
Than remakes?
Than remakes.
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah, when it's got all the proper... when they've done it wrong. But I can watch it. I've got no problem watching it.
I don't know. There's some remakes I'm like, oh, please don't do that. But the only good thing about it is that it means you get a 4K Blu-ray
of the original
DVD original coming out, which is always, so you can always do
sure,
that.
But they remade sort of like The Magnificent Seven a couple of years ago, and that kind of came and went with nothing.
I forgot about that.
And it doesn't even affect...
It doesn't affect
the original Magnificent Seven.
No, I think that's because that's probably... I mean, it is a genre because it's a Western, but it's a non-genre. It's quite a general movie, isn't it? So I think that's why that will get forgotten about more than... I heard you talking about Star Trek earlier, and I don't know how offended I was by the Star Trek reboot, because I think recasting the original cast is fundamentally flawed. Because what happens when you want to recast it again?
Yeah.
So you get like a third Spock. It's like what happened?
But also they're not that much different in age to where they were when they started. It's like when they recast Han Solo, and you go, yeah, but how old is he? Because how old is Han Solo in A New Hope?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like 34.
30, yeah.
Yeah.
And then how old is he in this? He's 25?
Yeah. He's still not seen so
it's not
much.
Like,
is it any good?
It's fine. It's like, it's as good as Stargate. Do you know
that's
what I mean?
A very backhanded compliment.
It's like, but it's like.
I liked it when it came out. I forgot about it. I thought we were talking about the TV show.
It's a fun adventure film where you just like go. It's a science fiction adventure film. We go, this is fine, but then it's not like Empire Strikes Back.
Well, plot twist. I think all Star Wars is fun adventure. It isn't. You don't really go to it for depth. You go for it, and most of it is saved by the performances of the original cast from the 70s onwards. That's where I think the one, two, and three come unstuck, because it's miscast.
It'd
be fine if it had a better cast. Mm. Not better. That's, I don't mean rude about the actors, but like more suited cast. Or
it's got a good cast, though, hasn't it? I think that there's something wrong with the way. He did a terrible job directing them.
Yes. But I guess there is something where you've cast Harrison Ford, and there is something that he is such a kind of personality that he's like that. You go, oh, he's brilliant. So he's obviously you've cast someone who is a star, even though they're not a star yet.
He's cast movie stars.
Yeah,
and then I think the problem with the original is he cast Natalie Portman, Ewan McGregor, and Liam Neeson's the closest you get to a movie star.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's kind of like you go like Emperor Palpatine. What's his name? Ian McDiarmid. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
he guess he's sort of like a character actor. But when you need someone like Natalie Portman, who needs obviously direction and needs to kind of like have motivation and stuff, you can't just like go. Harrison Ford didn't even understand the words that were coming out of his mouth.
Yeah. The people who are really great in the Star Wars prequels are all the kind of English character actors.
Yes,
it's Christopher Lee and Ian McDiarmid who just have that ability. And I think it comes from that sort of either that sort of mad Shakespearean acting where you can just go,
all these aliens are doing,
and it's like he's saying ridiculous things,
mother,
but you just buy,
yes, mother,
but you believe it, you totally believe it.
I think it's also that it was the gear change of movie making at the time where everything went green screen, and I think you can see the boredom on Liam Neeson's face.
Right.
From
yes.
Most
yeah.
of the first one, because he's just like, why, I don't know where I am.
Well,
and the people weren't used to acting against a green screen to that magnitude yet.
Oh, yeah, because that's all there is, isn't it? By the time you watch Attack of the Clones, there's nothing on screen.
It's when they're walking through the library talking to each other, and it's kind of like they must be on kind of like green conveyor belts.
Yeah, they look like how they walk in like Scooby-Doo cartoons or something. They've got that sort of
their feet are sort of like gliding backwards across the... And it's kind of like, it's so weird.
There's
watch
no weight to the actors.
Why have you filmed this on green screen? Why haven't you just found a big library?
Why haven't you just found a floor?
Well, that's the problem. It's just people not reacting to anything. And
yeah.
I thought Attack of the Clones and the third one wasn't so bad. I was in Ireland last weekend, and my friend had never seen a Star Wars filming. We were doing a gig later that night, and he wanted to say, oh, we'll watch Attack of the Clones. And I was literally apologising for it on behalf of the entire community of
I
fandom.
Think, yeah, when they were coming out.
It was like, oh, my God, this is a lot worse than I ever remember it being.
Yeah,
and I think because it's not as bad as Phantom Menace. And then I was like, oh my God, that's so dreadful. Absolutely appalling on every single fail at every level.
I think Phantom Menace is the best of them now, because it feels like that's still got some solid things.
We all know your opinions.
I think the car racing sections, Tatooine's quite cute.
Oh, God. The pod racing
that's
is
about
just...
about it, though.
Even at the time, I was bored shitless by the pod racing. You go, fucking hell, George, just make a car racing film and fuck off. Fucking...
What I want to know is, you know how obviously we're of a certain age where we've grown up with the original trilogy? I've never come across a fan who probably in their 20s now, late mid-20s, I guess, of the prequels. Has anybody?
I think... I know there's kids that loved it at the time. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there was lots of that. I think lots of kids genuinely liked Jar Jar Binks and things at the time.
It's the weird thing about the prequels is, and it might be because they're set before the original trilogy, is that they've never really affected the original trilogy for me.
No,
so
thankfully.
The thing about the sequels that they're making at the moment is they've kind of like gone, oh, why have you done that? Why have you done that with that character? Why have you killed Han Solo off? Why is Luke Skywalker doing this? And it's just like you look at it and you go, you look at it and you go, I just think, because they're sequel, it's kind of weird that you go, especially episode 8, and now it's been a year now. I'm kind of like, I've had a year.
So did you not enjoy the last one?
I didn't watch any trailers, and I went into it completely kind of like, oh, I'm going to see a Star Wars film. Uh-huh. And I didn't even like the opening crawl. It was something weird happened when I was watching it where I was just like, art. And then as it went on, and I watched it with a big group of people, it was like maybe 12 of us went to see it. And at the end of it, I was so ashamed that I hated it that I didn't say. We all went for a coffee afterwards, and I didn't say anything. Mm. And then everyone else gradually started saying, I didn't really like it. And then it was just like, oh. I thought it was just strange. Me being a cunt, do you know what I mean? Like turning up, just being like, I didn't like it, you know. And I was just like, and I thought it was such a weird reaction for me because, obviously, you know, I love Star Wars and I loved The Force Awakens, and Rogue One I thought was incredible.
Oh, yeah, mm. Same here.
And then the eighth one, I was just like, oh no, there's something terrible about this that I'm really not enjoying. And then, and I thought, maybe I'm the only one. And then it turned out that there were loads of other people that didn't like it.
See, I loved it. I didn't. No, let me rephrase that. I liked it. I couldn't see what everybody was offended by.
And you're a fan of Star Wars in general?
In general. I wouldn't say I'm a hardcore fan, but obviously I'm a fan of the originals and the trilogy. And then,
and you've got fond memories of the prequels until you rewatch them?
No fond memories whatsoever of the prequels. So I think that's probably it. Maybe it's it can never be as bad as those prequels.
So I took my mum to see it. My mum booked it for Boxing Day, and I'd already seen it two times by that point, and it was just like, oh no, I've got to see it again. And that was the best time I saw it, was the third time I saw it, because my mum, I was like watching it with my mum.
Yeah,
and she loved Carrie Fisher, but she didn't. She's not really into Star Wars. She's very casual. I mean, she knows who the R2-D2 is, but I mean,
no, it's like.
Do you know what I mean? She doesn't watch any of
really,
the films.
Let's face it, boys. Star Wars is made for the general public. It is not a genre. It's not made as a hardcore thing. It's actually escapist, big escapist movies. It's not. So on that level, I've only seen it once. So I've not
me
seen
too.
It.
And
so maybe I need to see it again. And
I thought when I watched it, there was bits of it I didn't like, but I was like, okay, but that was all right. That was okay. And then I saw it. But then the more I've sat with it, I like it less, and it doesn't feel like I want to watch it again. I've got no like, oh, I'd like to see that again.
I kind of want to see it. There's parts of me I go, oh, I could watch, and then I just go, it'll just annoy you. And so I just, and I think that's, but I think, but the thing about my mum is that she really enjoyed it. And you go, yeah, but she's such a casual fan that she probably pushed, doesn't know really the difference between Star Trek and Star Wars. Do you know what I mean? Where people used to get that confused all the time before Star Wars came back. And it's just like, oh, you like Star Trek? And you go, no, I don't. Star Wars, specifically. Specifically Empire Strikes Back.
No, I think that's interesting. Oh, like, yeah, I guess those Star Wars prequels are exactly like the current Star Trek movies, whereas, you know, Ewan McGregor is doing an impression of Alec Guinness.
Yeah, that's the that's the problem I have with them, is because new Star Trek, because the reason that original Star Trek worked is because of the chemistry of those actors. Nothing else, really. It's the chemistry between those people.
Yeah. Well, those main three, you know, Bones, Spock and Kirk were great. And when you watch the new ones, Bones has got nothing to do. Yeah. Simon Pegg, because he's Simon Pegg, has got loads to do. And you go, well, Scotty never had that much to do. It's just kind of like, you know, the balance of those.
Simon Pegg's great, obviously, because he knows what he's doing. But I watched The Cage as well, the pilot again the other day, and you can see when it doesn't work. And that why that guy was replaced, because the chemistry doesn't work with the other actor, and nothing offensive to him, but he just didn't work, and that he needed someone quite on a certain level of
I think he's probably dealt with the fact that he got replaced.
I know. But is he still alive? I don't know. But it's Shatner that makes it. So therefore, it's like recasting Tom Baker and Elizabeth Sladen as Sarah Jane and the Doctor. You
Which
can't recast those people.
But they recast the Doctor.
Yeah, they do, but they're not playing Tom Baker.
Oh, right, yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah,
you can recast the
saying.
Doctor as a generic sort of template, but the mistake is if you go back, it's...
if you had someone wanting to do an impression.
I know this is supposed to be a fun thing, but the bile's coming out, is the Avengers, the TV show Avengers, when that got made into a movie.
Oh, yeah,
You cannot recast Patrick McNee and Dinah Rigg.
That is the problem with that movie. Yeah. Because actually, there's lots of things about there's that movie where you go, like, movie. You go, oh, that's
yeah,
a good idea.
Yeah, the teddy bears and everything, yeah. And it's, I really like
which
it.
Which is weird, because when that came out, that seemed to be some part of the thing that was being criticised about. It was just like, oh, Sean Connery's wearing a... He's controlling
yeah,
the
exactly.
Weather,
and
he's wearing
and it's
a teddy
like,
bear.
That's what's good about
that's
it.
That's the show.
That's yeah,
what, yeah, that's what people said.
That's
to
what
me,
they
like,
got right about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. People were going, why is the teddy bears having a meeting? And I was like, oh, my gosh, have you not seen the original... it's not as crazy as people would think, the Avengers, but... It's certainly off the wall.
Yeah.
And then the nanny and the machine guns and all those things, all the little bit.
Talking about the Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman, Sean Connery Avengers, not Avengers Assemble.
There's only one Avengers, and that is John Steed.
But you're right, that is the problem, because it is, whenever it's come up about, oh, we'll do a new version of the Avengers, and it comes up all the time, it is almost impossible to recast.
It's impossible.
Because you just go, there's no one like Patrick McNee, because he's such a kind of quintessential Englishman in a way that doesn't really exist now.
It's not quite the same, but when they recast The Prisoner with Jim Caviezel, and you just like go, Patrick McGowan had such like a knowing kind of arch charm to him.
And such an anti-hero. That's a weird phrase, but anyone's an anti-hero, he is. It's so strange.
Such a weird show that when you try and do like a glossy Hollywood American remake of a TV, and maybe you could get away with it now, even now post Westworld, but like before it was kind of
And also the thing about The Prisoner, nothing really happens. He just tries to escape every episode. It's just done very stylishly. Yeah. So it's very hard to remake something that isn't actually.
But
much
also
substance
that
to him.
Wasn't successful in its own lifetime to the point where they got cancelled halfway through.
Yeah.
And so Patrick McGowan just went.
For a moment, who was number two in the new Jim Caviezel The Prisoner series?
It was. I believe I could answer that question. It was Ian McKellen.
It was Ian McKellen. Oh, you're right. It was.
How can we forget that?
Where do you think if you did it?
Number two.
Because you could have had, if you'd done it like the original series, you could have had a different number two each week, and you could have had like Stephen Fry one week or someone like that.
Oh,
that would have been very sort of prisonery, or someone like, who else would have been quite like odd kind of. Sort of British character actors of the time.
You could have Biggins. Christopher Biggins could do it. Didn't he do it originally? Wasn't he? Like...
He's in I, Claudius.
He's in I, Claudius.
Oh, that's Fan Club.
Yeah, it is Fan Club. So, Bunny, this is an impossible question, right?
Yes.
If you had to recast an Avengers movie in 2018, is there anyone you could think who'd be at all appropriate?
Well, funny enough, and the name of the movie and its sequel has gone out of my head already, but they've just done a very similar Avengers-esque movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's the one with Colin Firth and...
Oh, yeah, Kingsman.
Kingsman.
And
weirdly, if you look at it, that's kind of the Avengers, because the whole point of the Avengers is establishment Britain, bowler hat sort of suited, and youth.
Mm.
In the 60s, that's Emma Peel, Honor Blackman, Linda Thorson. Dinah Rigg, Honor Blackman, Linda Thorson, because they're the young hip things at the time.
Yeah.
Now he's playing the, and so in a weird way, that's the Avengers.
Taron Egerton.
He's playing Elton John, isn't he, in the new biopic?
I
don't think I've ever remembered his name. I just know him. I think he's brilliant. I've never actually learnt his name, which is
Taron. He's Robin Hood, isn't he? Robin Hood.
So weirdly, that's what I would I would just call that the Avengers. Of course, now it's a slight problem that the comic strip things come along and kind of
they won't get to do it for that reason.
Very much like Robbie Williams calling his album The Heavy Entertainment Show. It's absolutely buried the better original.
I will Google that.
So that's interesting. Colin Firth. But
I would certainly have Colin Firth as John Steed.
Oh, I do like Colin Firth.
Or maybe, who else would that be?
I think he's almost perfect.
Someone like that.
And then you
want
someone like Hugh Grant to play bad guy.
Yeah.
I would get all Hugh Grant as John Steed, I don't mind, but Colin Firth probably.
Firth has the same textured hair.
Yes.
It does.
So
they're both dreamy. That's
Well, we'll often do a thing here about where we'll talk about how much we like Hugh Grant and always have liked Hugh Grant, but it's a common fan club thing that comes up where we go, I've always loved Hugh Grant. I think he's brilliant.
I think he's brilliant in films. Because he's an old fashioned movie star, as in like a Joan Crawford movie star.
He's the same in every film.
But that's a movie star.
Yeah.
That's not an actor. An actor is a character actor, someone that plays something different every time. A movie star is a quantity that you know.
I mean, if you want Alec Guinness, get Alec Guinness. Mm. Don't get Ewan McGregor doing an Alec Guinness impression. And that's the thing. It's just kind of like, you go, you're Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And he's amazing.
You're pretending to be another actor.
Yes, yeah.
It's weird. And you're nothing like young Alec Guinness.
No. Yeah. I literally sat for Attack of Clones in that hotel room last weekend going, oh, my word, I didn't realise how bad this was.
And especially when you get to the beginning of... maybe it's Attack of the Clones, maybe it's the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, when you've got Ewan McGregor, and you think, you're more like Kenny Everett. It's kind of weird. But also, there is that really funny bit. There's one really funny bit where the spaceship, after the beginning, like, half-hour space battle, and the spaceship crash lands, and Ewan McGregor goes, well... another happy landing. And I think that made me laugh, but when I watched it recently. But I didn't watch it recently. I watched the supercut of the trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and a fan had done a 2.5-hour cut.
I've got one of the New Hope somewhere where it's like a scratch edit, and it's, I can't think what it's called now. It's a quite famous one. And it's kind of put in the deleted scenes, and it's got like, it's really, it's a bit like a Grindhouse version.
Right. I do like those edits.
And you, me and Nick are familiar with the Edinburgh Festival, but Ashreen, you're at the Edinburgh Festival yourself?
So I did the Edinburgh... It's 10 years. I only do a one-man show. I only do a one-man show, one-lady show, every 10 years. I'm due another one this year, and I've completely missed the mark. I'm still recovering from Edinburgh in 2008.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm still emotional, physically... scarred by the whole event.
From 2008.
Yeah, that's about right.
And I tell people, I've been using that joke for 10 years, and it's true.
Yeah, it's awful.
But a lot of things came out of it. Not the show I did, but like I met a lot of people. It's probably my fault because I had gone the year before and fell in love with it.
Yeah.
You know, and gone.
As a spectator.
My friend. It was on the cusp as well. It was this gear changing time in my life and my career when burlesque had come back. So burlesque revived cabaret and everything else, because everything up to then had been white guys in t-shirts doing stand-up comedy. Now I like white guys in t-shirts doing stand-up comedy, but there was nothing else from the early noughties. It was just that. And that's not my...
Even all the way to late noughties.
Yes, exactly. So
even all the way up to what, within the last 2 years?
Yeah, still is.
It still is. And it's great because it works and it's great. But it is... that revived the underground neo cabaret circuit from there on. And so my life changed from about that period. But it was just on the cusp of changing at that point. So I think I'd gone with full, you know, and I knew all the pitfalls. I knew what I was
going on. So hang on. Before you went up to Edinburgh in 2007, where did you start?
So Bunny Galore was created at a fancy dress party at drama school in 96.
Right.
Yeah, the name comes from... Bunny comes from a BBC documentary called Painted Babies, which is a child pageant documentary, and it's an hysterical grandmother on there. I've forgotten this fact, and I saw the clip the other day. I've been telling a different story for about the last 20 years. And Galore comes from Pussy Galore. Golden Eye hadn't come out yet, so Bond was retro.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, great. And it kind of played, because I was kind of going to go for that. There's an Avengers girl before Honor Blackman called Venus Smith, who's a singer in the first or second series. At that point, you know, the VHSs of these had never come out. I'd just seen a few photographs in the book. And I went, well, Venus Smith is quite a cute name. If you want to be that sort of 60s spy, we're talking the 90s here. Yeah. You know, that sort of era of retro has just kicked in. But I went for Bunny Galore and then, of course, GoldenEye came back and, you know, Bond came back a million
Bunny
times.
Bunny also suggests, like, Playboy bunnies and all that kind of stuff. That, it's got that kind of...
It sounds a bit like Pussy, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Which is the character in Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah, it's
Pussy
as well,
Galore, so that's why.
I didn't think of that when I said Pussy.
Just at the front of your brain.
Just at the forefront.
And we haven't even pointed out that you are fully dressed up. You have not come dressed for radio at all. You've got a little camera there.
Camera and she's got. I mean, I do love overhead lighting, obviously, when daytime, because it is a little bit frightening. So you know, I hope there's a filter on this, I have to say. So yes, it's so from about then. But I always say now, in retrospect, the first 10 years, I was doing it like Morse code in between acting work. So it was bits and pieces. It didn't solidify until. The Wham Bam Club was created, which is a burlesque show I did for 10 years.
Where was that?
Many places. Started at the Bassey Barge in 2007. That's where I first started hosting it. And then Lady Alex, who was the producer, took over as the host, and I became like the regular kind of like Nana, like the sort of comedy element of the show. And we went from Bassey Barge to what is now the Box. It was called the Soho Review Bar. At that point,
it was called
a different name every week.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was called the Soho. Before it came the Box, it closed down, and we had to find a new home in 2009.
Where's that?
The Box is in Soho. It's a famous New York cabaret nightclub that came over here, I think, in 2011.
What street's it on?
Berwick Street, or the beginning. It's in that sort of, you know, this sort of porn alley.
Yes.
Between Berwick Street and Square.
Oh, yeah, the porn alley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alley.
And ding, 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 we have a winner.
Yeah.
But we had to move somewhere really quickly, and we ended up going to the Café de Paris. So suddenly we became this mainstream West End show for about 5-6 years.
And where were you in Café de Paris? You were in, like, the main room?
The main room, yeah.
I mean, that's a big room.
It's a big room.
I mean,
but it is a dinner theatre venue, yeah. So... it took a while to get into the venue because it was almost like playing the Titanic ballroom type of thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's very strange. So you know, but you know, if someone had told me there's a movie called, I love a biopic. I love Bohemian Rhapsody, but I do love a biopic. I love Scandal, the movie about the perfumer scandal of the 60s. That is filmed at the Café de Paris.
Yes.
If someone had told me in 1988 when that film came out, when Elvira, Mistress of the Dark came out, one, I'd be a showgirl at the Café de Paris, and two, I'd be sort of doing the same kind of thing as Elvira does in a very small way compared to in 1980. I would never have believed you. So we were there for a long time. We left there in 2013. It's been in Hippodrome Casino and a few other places since, and we did a UK tour last year, and we finished in February. So the show kind of it's in hiatus now. So not bad though for about 12 years.
Lovely.
You know, we were doing.
Do
it
you
for
like
a long time.
That? I love when I'm watching an old sort of TV show, sort of set in Britain or something.
Oh, I love
seeing anything where I know that street.
Yeah,
and just fascinated by
all
any
the Carry
little,
On films. Yeah. I'm obsessed with like the locations of the Hammer Horrors, the Carry On films. You see old London.
Yeah,
I love it.
Carve Her Name with Pride.
Oh yeah.
My ex-girlfriend, her house is in the opening shot of that.
Wow, I love all and that.
And the whole thing was on that street that was leading away in Stockwell, that was leading away from... So it's kind of like you go, while I was watching it, you go, that's the house I'm in! It was really exciting.
Is it Richard Herring? Does he do a show here? Weirdly, it came back to me today. Richard started... He was in the Soho Review version... where the Box is now, and it's his fault that Wham Bam became successful, because he got heckled by someone on my table when I went to see the show. Well, I wasn't in the show that week, and I went to see the show, and that went viral.
I think I might have seen this.
And that was Wham Bam. But I was with a costume designer friend of mine called Ronnie, who was lovely, but we were with two people I didn't know. And you know, you just go, oh, lovely to meet you, how kind, Raina, thank you for coming. And then you watch it, and then this guy started heckling Richard on stage. And I've never been more mortified in my entire life.
Because
I don't know, what are you doing? Who are you? I think he had some issues. I think he was... you know, needed to be medicated in the days before, perhaps, you know.
That is awful,
mental health.
As a performer, if you're sort of associated with someone you don't know and then they're suddenly doing something, and you want to kind of try and distance yourself, like, I don't know, I don't really know him.
it's mortified. But things have changed a lot. The fact I'm sitting here in full costume and talking about the character is unusual. I also have all these rules that I had to be, you know, once in the costume... it's in the character. But things have changed so much because of Drag Race and stuff like that, where you see the real person, you see the character now. The lines are completely blurred.
It's much more in the culture now as well, isn't it?
Yes,
it's a
it
thing
really
that everyone
is.
Talks about it as just such a... like, it seems like every other person I meet is sort of now kind of attending drag shows. And
I know,
it's such a big thing in the... yeah, in the culture,
it's gone
everyone.
It's so mainstream.
Yeah.
I mean, not so much as here, but it is the revolution. And I'm all for it. I'm kind of old school, but I'm like, children, bring that revolution now. I have been waiting for you since about 2006. Come on, bring those lace fronts, hurry up.
But you're right, it's a generational thing, isn't it? It does feel like it's a different thing now than it was 10, 15 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, Courtney won Big Brother this year. Bianca Del Rio is playing Wembley Arena.
Mm-hmm.
Adore Delano has how many hit albums? all these incredible... Trixie Mattel is a huge star. Katia, these massive stars that have come out of that show. And I think it's probably the way we watch TV because of Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, people are exposed to this. And the audience is so young for it because they're like the new rock stars. They're the new heroes.
Yeah.
And does it feel like there's a generational thing within it as well?
I think so. I mean, I always think of myself... I don't like to think of myself as old school, but I kind of... I am in a... Because I think I'm very much in my own niche. I'm a kind of like a expert presenter that kind of is a character. Or I've become that anyway. And the horror hosting kind of came around when we started Wham Bam Left of the Café Dupree, and I was looking for a new project, and I kind of went, you know, I go that way. So I think it has become... There are a lot of new kids doing it. There's not really venues for them to play in, so that's the unfortunate bit. But I think it's, and we didn't arrange this. This is just by fluke that I've filmed my Christmas special on Tuesday and I've been in edit for 2 days. And on the Wednesday, I woke up to my phone going nuts at 9:30 in the morning because they had announced Drag Race UK finally after 4 years of false starts.
Right.
And Jonathan Russ brought the rights, and you know, and as soon as you say anything, because people are obsessed with the show, it goes huge. So yeah, there have been so many false starts in the last 4 years. So I didn't believe it to start with. I was like, oh yeah, the sun's obviously gone crazy and they've printed something that somebody's whispered by the water cooler. You go to Twitter and you see World of Wonder, the producers, and RuPaul tweeting about it. But I was an editor, and I just had to be locked in this room for another like 8 hours. And then and it wasn't until I met a friend on that night that I said it out loud to somebody, and I was like, I can't believe this is actually happening. Because people have always asked me, would I do the show? And I'm like, yes! They usually ask me, would you be on the show as a judge? I'm not that famous. I'm quite happy to... I'm really grateful to be a contestant, and I don't care if I went out in week first. I would still be grateful.
Yeah.
Because I love the show that much. Just because it's what it's done to the whole genre. You know what it's like in the UK? Stand-up comedians can be very mainstream. Drag can't be mainstream. Puppetry can't be... ventriloquist mm-hmm. can't be mainstream. And magic can't be nowadays, because it's kind of associated with the old school.
It's sort of seen magic be seen as cheesy or something.
So the fact the show's come along in the last 10 years and changed the face, the only time I get slightly angry is when people belittle the show, go like, you know, that's not it. You have no idea what has changed in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the last few years, it's just changed it completely. So it'll be very exciting to see what happens. I can't wait to see the new show.
Yeah.
So when did you two do Edinburgh then?
So I did it this year, but...
Oh, you're still in one piece?
Well, barely. I mean, I'm still having nightmares. but we would have both been there in 2008, I think.
Yeah.
I was
2008 there. I think you stink, Helm and Taylor, and Comedy O'Clock.
So we all would have been there at the same time.
Oh,
so
it does feel
that
weird.
We've all got this sort of shared thing. We all would have been in the same sphere at the same time, same bubble.
It's so weird. My friend Sally, I think she left Coronation Street the year before, and she... But she ended up doing, I can't remember what the name of the play is right now. I'm sure she was there. She was either there 2007 or 2008. And it so freaks me out when I find out that... Obviously, you know, Edinburgh's very big. Mm. But it still freaks me out when I know... Then you meet people down the line 10 years later and you go, what you were there too? It's just, how is... Yeah. Such
I mean,
gestalt,
it's our Vietnam. We'll always have 2008.
There's always a story. I would never have not done it because like the only thing that came out of that was... particularly amazing was I did a sketch, film sketch that I would show when I was getting changed, and it was a bit like Akon Antiques, the pastiche of Crossroads, mm-hmm. which I was massively into. The DVDs had just come out and I was loving Crossroads for all the right reasons, all the wrong reasons. But I loved the show so much, so I made this soap opera, and then I continued as a YouTube show. Before YouTube was YouTube, it was like me and little cat videos. So that kind of carried on for a long time. So that kind of brought me into more the TV world of stuff. It was from that originally. So that it's always a journey, isn't there?
But that's it. It feels though like it is the Vietnam, where as soon as you see Edinburgh 2008, you do want to go, I was there, man. We're all connected. We're already connected. Before you ever met us, we've all been there.
But you would have done it really well. I did not do
no.
it very well. It did not suit me at all.
Actually, yes.
not in 2008.
No, I was dreadful.
2008 was my best show, famously. My best show was 2008.
Of course.
Never surpassed 2008, no. So in a way, it's sort of like my Vietnam. If I came away from Vietnam thinking, yeah, I really nailed that war. really did a good job there. Never did anything better. So your Christmas special that you've just been filming, the film that you're showing at Christmas,
yes,
is called
Santa Claus versus the Devil.
Who's in that?
So I don't think any of them should be named. I think they should be. So it's a 1959 Mexican movie, which I think they made to tell the Mexican population about Santa Claus.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
Yes,
film.
Me too. So it's how to describe it? They obviously know they're religious, so they know the devil. So they pit Santa Claus against the devil. It's one of those trippiest, scary. I was obviously rewatching because now I've a bit like I don't know if you've seen the revival of Mystery Science Theater 3000, but I riff through the movie, so I pop up throughout the film, saying silly things. So you have to watch the film with much much closer than I used to. Perhaps I basically used to just film the links, and I've hosted this before about 5 years ago. I do not remember half of it, and it's 1,000 times worse than I remember, but in a hilarious way. There's like a dance of a two-faced dolls, this like you know this full ballet that goes on, which is like a nightmare version of turning around on a music box from Chitty. It's just terrifying on so many levels, and hilarious.
Right.
And is it? But is it? It's watchable, or is it one of those ones where you go, oh, I wish this was 10 minutes.
Obviously, I make it watchable. Obviously,
I watched the Adam West Robinson Crusoe in space.
Yes,
movie, which is kind of like
that.
It's fine, but you just go, I get it. Yeah. 10 minutes.
No,
that's all I need.
I think that's the biggest sin of any movie, though, is being dull.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
be bad,
but they were all a lot of them were dull, were they? Because it was just like we've got a poster, we've got a title, and we've got £10.
That was my Edinburgh Fringe show, basically. That was a poster and a title, and that was it. And then kind of like the rest of it was filled in the blanks.
Let it go. It was 2008.
But that is
you
the worst.
You reminded me of it. I've been
life's
in therapy
a
for
fucking
years.
Journey. Yeah, you just got to fucking ride it. It's fine. Life's a roller coaster. I'm Ronan Keaton. Just looking at the list of your favourite films here, Fearless Vampire Killers never gets enough fucking love.
No, I know.
Absolutely right.
So obviously, yeah. So Roman Polanski
is in it. Yes. Sharon Tate is in it.
Yes, which is very makes it extra tragic, doesn't it? Because I don't know whether it's her last. I think it's her penultimate movie before she's murdered.
But it's such a fucking great film.
It's just the most amazing score. So beautifully shot.
A title sequence
is incredible.
Animated title sequence with blood dripping
so
down
beautiful.
All the letters.
It's one of those things, like haunting. I guess like the Mario Bava movies as well. It's people that have done a sort of takeoff of Hammer, but sort of done it with way more style than you do in a Hammer movie.
Actually, it's more European horror, which is...
Yeah.
So I'm a great fan of horror comedy, like Frankie Howard and The House in Nightmare Park. Movie so much. Cats and Canary with Bob Hope, that type of... So you've got really quite scary stuff, but with comedy.
Abbott and Costello meet.
I mean, frankly, I love that movie, but obviously I love the Universal, but I do have a secret love for that movie.
Oh, it's great. Really well done.
When VHS first started, I used to rent two movies from the video store every week, and one was Young Frankenstein, and one was... the British title is Dance of the Vampires, which is much more of a romantic title. People don't really know. The musical in Germany is called Das der Vampire. So it's That's the Dance of the Vampires. But I prefer that title because it's much more romantic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has this beautiful ball scene at the end. It's just... I love it.
It's got the mirror sequence, isn't it? He's dancing in the vampire ball. And they're in a mirrored room, and he keeps looking over, and he's the only one that's in the...
Yeah, there's the three of them. So it's they're trying to rescue a girl. So it's an old professor, the young aide, and the heroine.
Sharon Tate.
And Sharon Tate, and she's in this beautiful red dress. In fact, I think they used it in a different film, which is dreadful, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I think it's in that. Maybe.
The mirror sequence,
that gag was used in that. So they're basically, they're all dancing and they think they're going to go with it. They turn around and the mirror end of the room is down there and they're still hopping, doing the sort of gavotte, whatever it is. And they realise only those three are visible and the 200 vampires behind them are invisible. And it's just, that's one of the best moments
in cinema. It's got some great bits in it. I really love that film. Good for you. And we're running out of time. What's your favourite film of all time ever? just really quickly.
Probably Some Like It Hot.
Some Like It Hot.
I mean, yeah, it is a belter. Comedy. It is a belter.
Brilliant. And
if you it is. It's one of those things where you go, it's sort of perfect, isn't it?
It's perfect.
Sort of
go, yeah.
It's great. Too really perfect. Great.
Yeah. And that's famously got Tony Curtis doing an impression of Cary Grant.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Which I never knew as a child.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I didn't
know
who Cary
Grant
was. I think I saw it before I knew who Cary Grant was.
Well, they made a film together, didn't they? Was it Operation Petticoat?
Oh, I don't know.
Curtis and Cary Grant.
I think, did they do one with Jane Mansfield as well? I can't remember.
Jane Mansfield. Yes. Cary Grant and Jane Mansfield.
Kiss
Them For Me.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that is the funniest title. It's got the poster. It's Cary Grant leaning over and Jane Mansfield with her huge tits. And the title is Kiss Them For Me.
I'm not even convinced they meet in the movie either. I think she's the second female lead.
She's way down the important list. But it's just such a funny poster. Right, okay, we've got time for our game.
We've got to do a game now. And this game is better or worse. We have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before it, based entirely on my own opinion. That's how you win points. So starting off with Richard Widmark.
Who's Richard Widmark?
He's like in lots of film noirs. Basically, he's cool. But is he better or worse than John Wayne?
Oh, better.
He is better than John Wayne.
Richard Widmark is better.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he is.
Controversial.
Is Katharine Hepburn better or worse than John Wayne?
Better.
Better. Yeah, better. Is Clark Gable better or worse than Katharine Hepburn?
Ooh, worse. Ooh, worse.
I want to say worse. Yeah. Yeah. Is Humphrey Bogart better or worse than Clark Gable?
Personal opinion.
Humphrey Bogart.
Worse.
Humphrey Bogart's better than Clark Gable.
I would say better, I'm afraid.
What's Clark Gable done?
Did I get the wrong
Elizabeth
one?
Taylor, Clark Gable better or worse than Humphrey Bogart?
Elizabeth Taylor's better than anybody.
Bogart is better than Elizabeth
I think I will say.
With that cleavage, those eyes, and that jewellery, she wins.
Lauren Bacall, better or worse than Elizabeth Taylor?
Oh.
Worse. I saw her do a talk the other week and fuck me. Yeah.
I want to say better. I really like Lauren Bacall. Judy Garland, better or worse than Lauren Bacall?
Judy Garland's better.
Yeah,
I'd say better.
Bing Crosby, better or worse than Judy Garland?
Worse.
I don't like Bing. I might say better.
I do love him, but Wizard of Oz.
Judy.
Hey, Fred McMurray, better or worse than Bing Crosby?
Fred McMurray, come on, mate.
I've
got to look him up again. Fred McMurray.
Hazy for me.
Okay, I'm going to say worse than Bing, but I do like him. He's a hard cat.
I will Google.
But it was a good
Fred
it was a good
McMurray.
Round.
Is that the end?
That's
Fred
the
McMurray.
End.
Oh. What's his Fred? Four. Was Fred McMurray in Double
Indemnity? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
It's great. He does comedy very well. He does serious very well.
Was there an outcome to that?
And that's it. Well, basically, you got four.
Got four.
I didn't understand the rules.
I know. It was entirely based on. It's not based on anything. It's a game that has no significance.
Four. Do you know what? I think there is a lot of fucking significance. You're only the second guest to have got four.
Right.
It's not the worst. The worst is Sam Ashurst with three.
So are you supposed to do the same? The point is you do the same?
You have come behind every other guest that we've had.
That's a title for
but
a
you
show.
Know what? Edinburgh 2019. Come and see it, the Pleasance.
If we put it into context, we've only had two guests that have got 10, two guests that have had 9, and then the
I was surprised
guests.
You got 4. I thought you were doing very well. I don't know what happened.
Well,
but it's entirely based on my own opinion, which doesn't mean anything.
I didn't know who two of them were off the top of my head.
Okay,
check them out.
I think that was actually what you're doing there is you're scraping the bottom of the barrel there by finding.
We've done it for 6 months now.
Yeah, I know, but you've had Roger Moore a few times, and you've had Christopher Lee a few times.
I just
think that you should shake him up a bit, but I think putting Fred McMurray in there is a low blow.
I love Fred McMurray. Yes. Check him out. Check him out, fan clubbers.
Double Indemnity, cracking movie.
Of course it is.
Amazing
film. Of course it is.
Saw it at the cinema. Maybe 2 months ago. But what I would say about that is that don't know who Fred fucking Murray is, right?
That's not my fault now.
It's not. It's barely my fault.
We're falling out now, Bunny. We're falling out.
I just think it was just a real kind of like.
You were here for the split
end.
Episode.
It's real.
This is where it all falls apart.
It was shameful. It was shameful, Nat. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm embarrassed for you. okay, so what channel is your Christmas special?
I'm on Showcase TV, which is, I think, Sky Channel 455, I think it's now. It's changed a few times. And I think it probably premieres Christmas Eve. It's on over the Christmas week.
What New Year's. A treat.
Yes. So if you want Nightmares Children, watch that.
And is there anything else you'd like to promote?
Oh, just me in general. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Bunny Galore, on Instagram at The Real Bunny Galore, and probably at a bar in Soho later on, probably.
Wonderful. Then that's Christmas wrapped up.
That's Christmas, yes.
Did we actually talk about Christmas in any shape or form? No, we didn't, did we?
No, don't have to. That's for other people that have to be seasonal. But we're not seasonal. We are reasonable.
We're all year round.
Okay, right. Going to play a... have we got another... Is there another show coming in after this today? No? Oh, okay. So we can go right up to the nub. It's,
we might as well play a bit of a little Christmassy treat.
Okay, so this is your favourite song. Is it your favourite song of all time or your favourite Christmas song?
Favourite Christmas song. Basically, this is the first time I'm not doing pantomime for about 25 years and I'm getting Christmas off for the very first time and I'm loving it. So I'm feeling very Christmassy at the moment.
And so we have Judy Garland playing us out tonight, live in the studio. Judy Garland, have yourself a merry little Christmas. It leaves us just time enough to say thank you, Bunny Galore, for joining us the studio. And for all of our listeners,
super slick.
5 out of 5.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.